Our second speaker is Brandon Burke. Brandon's been an archivist for recorded sound collections at the Hoover Institute Archives at Stanford University for 7.5 years. He earned an MLIS in Preservation Administration at the University of Texas at Austin in 2004, and he did his practicum at LC, splitting his time between recorded sound and the Preservation Directorate. He seems to have the dubious honour of having been a government employee for technically 2 months before he escaped to Stanford. From 2004 to 2010, he was chair of the ARSC's Associated Audio Archives Committee. Other past positions, he managed the Richard F. Wright Jazz Archive at the University of Kansas, contributing writer for All Music Guide and Wax Poetics magazine. And the title of his presentation is Our Housing for Cracked Phonograph Discs.
Thank you. I apologize for the cryptic nature of that presentation title. It's actually about our housing for cracked phonograph discs. I also want to move these things closer to me so I can grab them when I need them. I hope somebody will grab that for me, please. Thank you. Thank you very much, Fiona. Very little about us here. I don't need to talk about our collections. Founded in 1919 by Herbert Hoover's donation of his private library to Stanford University. You can see the number of collections and linear miles of collection material we have. And it's very tall. I work in that tall building. The origin of this housing was because we have, you'll find out later, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 broken, cracked, or terribly delaminating discs in our collection, and we kept placing them on our laboratory table and ran out of room. So there you have it. Takes a lot of room. We reached our limit, and our cue bottlenecked our technician said, I can't do anymore until you find a place to put the ones that are broken. So I finally got around to doing it, and so we had to do something. And with that, I should say, before I get further on with this thing, what we did here is really a very simple solution. It's based on the way that book and paper conservators have been taking care of bound volumes for decades. So I feel kind of silly coming up here like this is a watershed moment for recorded sound preservation, because I'm not sure that it is, but it's a really practical, cool thing that works. So, with that, it was based on a design that the Conservation Division at LC was nice enough to provide me with. This is something that was drafted in 2007 that, to my understanding, was ultimately not put into use. This is an image of the 16-inch disc housing. We indeed made 10, 12, and 16-inch disc housings. I'll be talking, it occurred to me I only included information about the 16-inch disc housing in this presentation, but I'm happy to answer questions about the other. We had to ask ourselves before we bought materials, you know, what do we want this thing to do? And again, it's very, very, very simple. We want a stable housing for something that's glass and broken. And we want to be able to stack them, because like I said, it's a really expensive footprint on your lab table to have something that is a quarter of an inch tall that can't go anywhere and you can't put anything on it. For our purposes, we're only putting unique non-commercial transcriptions in them. So as we go along, that probably will play a factor in how this thing works out. And we had, you know, to my knowledge, in the neighborhood of 30. How do we want to store them? In standard issue, drop front metal edge boxes. They already are the size we need, and they're right there in front of us, and we don't have to further customize anything, so why not use them? And we wanted to stack as many as we can inside the box, and then further stack the boxes. We ultimately went with two boxes high. They're going to live on standard archival metal shelves in our stack area, and we're at this bottom one here. I don't know when we're ever going to really access them, so they're not going to be jostled around much, so that actually played a role in how we put these things together. Because we needed only in the neighborhood of 30, we could be kind of boutique with them. Some may take umbrage with that and say we were entirely too boutique with them, but we'll see what you think. Again, designed to fit standard metal edge boxes, we save some money by not, you know, designing our own box. And we ruled out foam around the perimeter and within the cracks because the potential for catching the delaminated nitrate. So, and ruled out coroplast. And if you guys don't know what coroplast is, you're getting an accidental sneak preview. This is a plastic corrugated board. So this is one of the prototypes we used. And you'll see more of them in a bit. One of the things we ran into pretty quickly was that the 16-inch housing is 1 1/4 inches shallower than its corresponding metal edge box. We had some options there. We could customize the box, but that was just unnecessary money to spend. We could make the housings bigger, but as you'll see in one of the later slides, we really took great pain to utilize every square inch of the board we were buying to try to make it as affordable as possible for us and everybody. So we decided to use a foam spacer, and again, because we're not really moving the things around much, they're not going to be, you know, jostled around enough to for that to be too much of a concern. The first unit we made was entirely B-flute board. It was Conservation Resources lig-free, acid-free B-flute board, the standard board that nearly any preservation department at a university anyway has on hand. And the issue we had with that, we had some prototypes made not only by us but by the vendor we're using, which is the UC Bindery in Berkeley. They ended up bowing along, if you can look at my hands here, they ended up bowing along the fluting of the board. So we next went with, I'll go ahead and do the next slide. We next went with water-resistant B-flute board and a combination of the two because the water-resistant is more expensive. So we could maybe try to combine the two and see if that worked. Coroplast, you can see. And finally, we decided on binder board, or Davy board, as it's called in the Kleenex kind of way. And then ultimately, we went with two binder boards because we could. And it's actually about the same price as B-flute board, so we didn't really raise the price of anything. Here you can see exactly, you know, the extent to which we did take advantage of all the square inches available to with one set of board. This is the software is called CaseMake, and that's what the UC Bindery uses to for its robotic mat cutter, which you can see in this photograph. This is Mike Foley, the head of the bindery. And you, here he's holding a 12-inch housing. We decided on this particular day to work on the 12-inch housing because it takes less board to make them. So why mess around with brainstorming with wasting board? So, and indeed you can see that on the bottom right-hand side, it is actually flush with both the back and the front of the metal edge box. So the 12-inch ones fit. This is the result. There's some cross-grain corrugated board. You can see two, in fact, this too is the result of that labor. There is binder board both on the top and in the center of this housing. So the bottom of this clamshell, there's binder board sandwiched between or on either side, and then cross-grain B-flute on top, and finally a platter, so that when you lift up a broken disc, you don't have to lift up several pieces of a broken disc. You can let it lie. And in here, you can see an image of the housing without the platter and my colleague holding a disc. This is how they look when they're in boxes. We put a heavy and a glass sticker on them. No one but audiovisual staff will grab these anyway, but it's just a good idea. In particular, if there's a flood or something like that, people are grabbing boxes like crazy, so they know. We just were at the collection level with the information on the spine. In cases where we have 15 or we don't have that many, 10 discs that are all broken by the same in the same collection, then we'd probably get more specific. And as well, on the bottom right-hand corner, you can see that there's some item level description on that particular box. To be clear, the idea with the drop front box is that you can pull the disc out 5 inches and find out what's on it before you take all of them out and try to find out which disc you're looking for. This is what they look like when they're on the shelves. You can see two of them are stacked there with discs in the more normal vertical orientation below and earthquake straps. We ran into a problem, and unfortunately, we ran into this problem last week. And so you shouldn't be able to see Alan Houston's feet, but you can because these B-flute platters warped. They're not adhered to anything, Our thought is that it's the PVA that's internal to the Bee Flute Board, and we don't even live in a humid environment. So it caused the discs not only to be on an unstable surface, but to rise above the top surface of the sink mats. And as we know from Pickett and Lemko, surface imprint was most noticeable in discs whose surfaces had been in contact with corrugated cardboard. So we wanted to avoid that. It's a really old picture there, but hopefully you can see some ridges on those. So this is something we were looking to avoid. So we went with a binder board platter. In this case, a 3.25 millimeter binder board. We found out quickly that it's very difficult to cut into circles, either with a handmade mat cutter or on Mike's machine. So we decided, you know, we can make the platter square. We had it in our head that it had to be a circular platter, and it doesn't have to be, so it can be square. So what we found out was that we didn't need to deal with a circular mat cutter, to say nothing for people down the road having to acquire a circular mat cutter. It made them much easier to produce, and it introduced the ability to use scrap board, which is what I have, which is all of this stuff, which ends up being really crucial and saves a lot of money when you're making these things. And also it limited the materials to binder board and standard Bee Flute board, which is the most common thing in the world at any university preservation department. And not everyone is, but that's what we are, and this is our housing for our discs. This is what we did for phase two. You can see the square sink mat. And we didn't model it after the inside of a Kit Kat, but it looks like we did. I should have had this better prepared. This, and I'm happy to show everybody later this thing, because it's going to be very difficult to see from back there. This is the housing, and we initially had these cuts here emulating the plan from the previous design, but as it happens, all you need to do is cut a corner on each of these, and it's a terrific, this is a very, very thick binder board. And as, I'll show you in a later photograph, but I'll show you how the scrap board can be used to make the second and third layers of the housing. The top layer of the housing, if for no other reason than cosmetics, we use just one sheet of board. This is a detail of the cut in the platter, and you can see that there, above that layer, are now two layers of Bee Flute board. So in no situation should it ever rise above the top layer of the sink mat. Here you can see different lengths of scrap board and how they can be applied. We were stacking them rather like laying brick for the bottom two layers and then single layer on top. Scalability ended up being another windfall thing for us. We have thankfully only two bent aluminum discs, but all you need to do is keep stacking these things higher and perforate your spine a little higher up and fold it over, and they can be as high as you want them to be. These were the materials that were used. Again, I think all of these things are pretty common. And let's see. I actually forgot to mention, the discs affected by this project are discs from the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty collection, broadcast recordings from the Commonwealth Club of California, and the San Francisco Post of the U.S. Foreign Broadcast Intelligence Service, which are monitoring radio recordings from Tokyo and Guam in the World War II era. Likewise, I regret to inform you that because of the 11th hour redesign, this thing here I finished on Monday. So I don't have exact design specs. I'm happy to give them to you later. In fact, I would love suggestions as to how I can actually deliver them to you in the best way. I really want this to be, Chris used a good term earlier today, I want this to be an open source housing. We have a vendor. I don't want to necessarily give you their information yet, because I don't want people to pound him with something he doesn't know what to do with yet, because he hasn't seen this prototype. But I'll have a price from him, and I'll have specs to give all of you. But I want this to be something everybody can use, and you can change it and manipulate it in any way that you see fit to fit your organization. And with that, these are the colleagues that helped me with this presentation. And finally, that's how to get a hold of me. I neglected to bring business cards. They're in my room. So you're welcome to give some to me, or otherwise talk to me now or later on after the program. Thank you.
So, Brandon, just one thought. You might want to have an extra layer of a binder available in case any of your discs are double-sided, so that you can encase them and flip them to play the other side.
That's what we do when we take them, when we open the housing, and that's a great point, Brad. Actually, thank you. We were doing that just Monday, actually. You can place a binder board on top of the one that's already on top of the disc that's itself on top of a board. Pull it up and then. Put your hands like this and flip it like that. That's absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up.
Any other questions? Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you.